Have you noticed, Devin, that there's a new cult of euthanasia going on? There's a suicide cult going on, right?
Yeah.
It's very frightening. Putting aside the fact that suicide is itself a sin, right? We understand that, and that's not good. But there seems to be an encouragement of suicide, like the what can go wrong sort of category, where I think it's Belgium and Holland and now Canada are also pretty aggressive about allowing people to kill themselves. And I think that the standard is getting lower and lower as to what it takes to allow yourself to be killed. And I think there's a push for this because, you know, global warming and, you know, why should a public country or the country's public health system have to take care of these people who might be ailing? So, you know, it all sounds really nice and well that the public health system takes care of everyone for free, no less. Yeah. And then, you know, the people are a burden, you know, and there's no charge to it, so, or very little charge. So, you know, for those of you who are really suffering and you know, have the hospitals incur so much to take care of you, it'd be so much easier if you were just like, what's the word I'm looking for? Dead. Okay. So that's, I think there's an element of that, yeah. But there is think about the culture that will develop with this. This is the theme of our show, that the euthanasia cult, the suicide cult. Think of the impact that this will have. But of course, the left never thinks about impact. They just think of what sounds nice for the time being. Right. So, you know, it really makes them feel good. But what if we get to this point where it goes beyond Holland and Belgium and Canada and God knows what other countries that are sympathetic to the idea of euthanasia, and it will spread,
yeah.
as it inevitably will, because if you have a godless culture and civilization, the more people will flock to the idea of, well, you know, nothing is nothing here. There's no purpose to my life. Suicide is an option. It's one of the many things I can do with my life. I don't know, just squander all my money,
yeah.
Or I can just check out. Because after all, I came from nothing and I'll go back to nothing. There's no God. There's no universe, structure. Everything's random. So I'm out. Isn't it easy to do that? I'd love to hear your thoughts about the consequences. Like when COVID was hitting and there's a shutdown, you know, you and I started talking about the effects, and also, Ari did as well. Yeah. What is this going to lead to?
Right.
And we were able to guess a lot of things, but a lot of things we weren't able to guess. I wouldn't have guessed, for example, there's going to be a specific run on toilet paper. Okay,
right.
I get it that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have guessed that the ports would be so clogged up. But in hindsight, it makes sense. But I was able to guess a lot of things, like there would be more spousal abuse, more crime, more this, more that.
Yeah.
Kids would suffer because they would be home. There'd be less, communication skills going on. One thing I didn't know was that masks would make kids unable to read other people, and that really affected their early development, right?
Yeah.
So that was, you know... So putting aside the shutdown from now, if we're going to have this euthanasia/suicide culture, here's one thing that I see is going to happen. Your friend Bobby is feeling down, and he seems to be chronically down. And you know, it's just annoying to be with him. It really is. So part of your normal discussion with him would be today, before the suicide culture, today you would say, oh, have you seen a psychologist? Have you seen a psychiatrist, perhaps? There are some drugs that can help alleviate your pain if you're depressed. You know, maybe you can take this or that drug. Not that I'm a big fan of those things, by the way, but that would be part of the parlance today. In fact, I think it's too much. The drug parlance is a little too much, but whatever. It is what it is. Have you thought about exercising? Have you thought about joining a church? Have you thought about joining some sort of social organization? Have you thought about quitting your job, if it's so bad for you? Have you thought about breaking up with, Jerry because he's not been so nice to you? Whatever it is, that's how you would talk. But now, when you talk to people, you would say, hey, you know, have you thought about killing yourself? Oh, right? I mean, yeah. Don't you think that's going to be part of the equation?
Yeah.
Part of the conversation. You know what? You can always kill yourself. I mean, they have some great, you know, centers that will be happy to take you. And you can choose the motif that you would like. You can choose where your ashes will be spread. They'll take really good care of you.
Yeah, and remember, like, this must have been a year ago. I think they did a Hulu special about it. There's a girl who, and her boyfriend was suicidal. And he was like, oh, I want to kill myself. And she was like, oh, okay, yeah, you should. And then she actually got convicted of that. That's how fast things change. Wow. You know, now it's that she's giving medical advice and take away her medical license.
So she actually just said, yeah, you should kill yourself.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. That was She was kind of reverse psychology.
It's a real story.
100%.
And she was convicted of what? Aiding and abetting a suicide? Is that the idea?
Yeah.
And that was here in America.
I think it was in Jersey.
Okay. Well, Jersey's not necessarily America, you know.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
All right.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. I'm not surprised. I mean, Things have really changed dramatically. We're entering into very bizarre territory here. Now, when you have that culture, when you encourage people to commit suicide, that's part of the parlance. So what happens when you're dealing with an ailing mother or father or brother or whatever, a friend, and you say, look, you know, I'm really just overwhelmed taking care of mommy. I just can't take it anymore. It's expensive for me. It's taking time away from me and my wife. I really would rather travel to Italy.
Yeah.
But mom, here we are in Ohio, and I feel obligated to take care of you. Mom, have you thought about killing yourself? It's wonderful. They've got these great programs. In fact, maybe they won't even say necessarily that it is a euthanasia place.
Right.
They'll just take care of you.
Yeah.
And they'll have power of attorney, and you'll see the children of these parents being a little bit more assertive, maybe even aggressive, in encouraging their parents to kill themselves. That's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah.
There's a movie that came out, I think, in 1970 or 71 called Soylent Green. Charlton Heston was in it. And the gist of it was, this came out of the scare of the overpopulation concept, by that guy. I forget what the population bomb. I forget the name of the author. It was a bestseller, sadly, and it really affected people. And people decided not to have any children. And they said that by the year 1990, that terrible things will happen. Right.
Yeah.
So this movie takes place in the way future of 1990. Okay. And the cities are well overpopulated, and it's time to, you know, and it's a whole different culture, and people are encouraged to kill themselves.
Right.
And they go into this beautiful big room, and they're encouraged to see whatever kind of movie motif in the background, usually maybe a landscape of some beautiful mountains. And then they administer this drug that will slowly drift them away into a sleep and then to a coma, and then they die. And that's the way it is. It's a very bizarre sort of movie. But I begin to wonder, are we going to enter into that sort of territory? And not only that, of course, there's a lack of concern for life altogether. But here we are. Already we have an abortion culture as it is. That's well established in America. So why would it be so outrageous to encourage suicide, right? I mean, these people are ailing. In some cases, they don't even know where they are. Maybe they're going blind and deaf, and life is not pleasant for them anymore. They just want to go.
Yeah.
What's so wrong about that?
Right. And if you remember the fool, the idiot, Sarah Palin, who said, you do Obamacare, we're going to have death panels. And everyone's like, what an idiot, what a fool, and
there's something like that. Yeah, no, yeah. Look, in fairness, there is not yet a suicide culture in America.
Right.
But it is coming to a theater near you.
Yeah.
There's no way that this suicide culture is not going to come.
Yeah.
And I'm really upset about having to predict that, because my social predictions come true.
Okay.
And it's a question of when. That's fair. God willing, it won't happen for decades, maybe even centuries to come. But I think, unfortunately, you're going to start seeing a lot more of this within 5 years.
Yeah.
Maybe even 4 years. You're going to hear the national discussion. Why? Because, look, we have an aging population.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of that. You're going to see that China is going to be doing that a lot.
Oh, God.
And it's happening in Europe all over the place. So it's inevitable.
Yeah.
And I hate saying it's inevitable, but it's going to be inevitable. And then as the push for global warming / climate change / whatever it's called today, they're going to say, well, look, this is going to be good. You're doing your part. You're not burdening the system, first of all, the health system of this or that country.
Yeah.
And in addition, you're not, you know, expending carbon dioxide by every breath that you take. And we don't have to have ambulances, or not as many at least, and not as much healthcare. It's a win-win,
right?
As far as they're concerned. It's very concerning. So I just, anyway, think about that. This is maybe for the ages, so to speak, where we might look back on this and say, I told you so.
Yeah.
It will have far more consequences than we think. But that dialogue that I talked about, like, hey, well, maybe just kill yourself.
Yeah.
That's an option. Yeah. I mean, and you'll be saving the planet. And we'll have a nice little ceremony for you. Oh, thank you. Would you do that for me? Yes, sure I would. You know I would.
Yeah.
And that's the way it's going to be.
Right.
All right. We got more news to talk about. As you know, especially in Israel, the situation in Israel is that Israel has pulled out a substantial amount of its troops from Gaza for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily a good thing. There's been some pressure on Israel by the Biden administration to do exactly that. I think the unfortunate strike upon relief workers in the southern part of Gaza, where I think 7 relief workers were tragically and inadvertently killed, really kind of contributed to that push. But I think that was just an excuse. They've been wanting to do that for a long time. I think what's really going on is that Biden wants to win back the votes that he's inevitably going to lose in Michigan, regardless of what he does in Gaza. So it's a strange dynamic, right? But what I've noticed also is that, or what's happening is, Israel saying, look, we're going to go into Rafah, which is that southernmost town in Gaza, as we talked about before, and we're going to destroy Hamas. We know that Hamas is right there. I don't know what Israel's up to. I'm lacking information. One thing I can tell you is that Israel would not let a situation grow where it would pull out of all of Gaza and let Hamas, which is now presently holed up in Gaza, in Rafah, somehow be able to now, you know, scatter throughout all of Gaza again, which would make it almost impossible for Israel to get rid of the remaining bad guys. So I know that can't be happening. Something else is up. There's talk that Israel is now redirecting its attention to Hezbollah, which is in the north, towards southern Lebanon, and possibly attacking Iran, which, of course, is the source of all evil things, at least in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And I'm curious what's going to happen. There is talk because Israel has killed the sons of various Hamas leaders.
Nice.
And really in a very effective way, and it was great. I mean, the sons themselves were militants and terrorists. These were people who could use a little killing, as we often like to say. Iran has threatened to, and said it promised it would have an immediate retaliatory attack upon Israel. Israel is expecting that. American military intelligence is warning that there will be such an imminent attack by Iran. I don't know. I'm not so certain about that, because I think they know that Israel is so strong that any serious attack upon Israel would be met with incredible retaliation.
Yeah.
Now, I just saw the Israeli military recently did a before picture of Tehran.
Wow.
Wow. Right. So they did this for Gaza. They did a before picture of Gaza.
Yeah.
And then they did after pictures after they flattened a lot of Gaza buildings, right?
Yeah.
Just to kind of make it clear, this is what it was. This is what it has now become.
Right.
So now they're taking before pictures of Tehran.
Whoa.
Which, you know, that's kind of like my little fantasy to see Tehran wiped out.
Yeah.
God willing, they could somehow get all the good guys out. But a lot of Iranians really hate their regime. And they said, yep, please bomb us. Just do what you can.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll really see. I think the next couple of weeks will be very telling. But I know that Israel will come out on top of this. There's no way that Israel will let America dictate some sort of pullout of Gaza entirely, at least.
Yeah.
Now, Hamas, related story, Hamas can't even account for 40 of the living hostages, which is not a surprise. So, I mean, what did you expect? I mean, Hamas, it's not as if Hamas has a central way station, you know, here. Okay, thanks, here, let's process these hostages.
Right.
Yeah. Well, no, what they did is they just kind of spread them to the wind, and this or that family would take this or that hostage, and then in turn it was, you know, sent to somebody else. You know, God forbid, it's, you know, for one torture to another, or one rape to another. I don't know. It's the brain, the mind just recoils in horror in terms of all the possible horrors that could be happening. So, I don't know. I just don't know. I do suspect that Israel is going to take some very aggressive action very quickly. Israel does need to end this war at some point. Not because of media attention or pariah status or anything. I don't give a crap about that.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what Israel does. It just doesn't matter at all.
Right.
Israel can send in aid truck after aid truck. They spend 400 trucks in daily now, and it has been doing so. Do you think that the Palestinian supporters are saying, okay, we can go home now. We're good with Israel. Yeah. They're doing the right thing.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. They pulled out a tremendous number of. So you think the demonstrations are going to lighten up in any shape or form?
No.
In fact, if Israel pulled out every single soldier from Gaza right now, and not only that, but sent an apology letter saying, you know, we feel really bad about what's happening. Do you think that they would change their tune whatsoever? They would say no river to the street over and over again,
yeah.
And they would continue. Because they would feel even more emboldened. We're halfway there. We got rid of the monsters, the Zionist bastards, right?
Yeah.
And look at how, I'd like you to hear this particular interesting story about how CNN takes a look at this. Because, wow, she talks that this is, what's her name? Anita something? Erin Burnett, right, there you go. Erin Burnett from CNN. She grills this spokesman for the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, about the airstrikes and support for Gaza and so on. Watch how he totally turns her around.
According to the AFP, senior Israeli military officials have said around 2 civilians have been killed for every Hamas fighter that you have successfully killed in the Gaza Strip. So that's 2 civilians for every terrorist. Can you confirm that?
Yeah, I can confirm the report, and I can say that if that is true, and I think that our numbers will be corroborated, if you compare that ratio to any other conflict in urban terrain between a military and a terrorist organization using civilians as their human shield and embedded in the civilian population, you will find that ratio is tremendous, tremendously positive, and perhaps unique.
Yeah.
Did you hear that mic drop? Because I did. That was a pretty nice mic drop there. Look, it's terrible. You don't want any civilians to die, innocent civilians. But first of all, you know, the suggestion that somehow these are just civilians, a lot of them, you know, this is put out by the Palestinian or, you know, health ministry or whatever they call themselves. So that's if you even believe them at all. And then civilians, okay, well, you, you think of the like these poor huddled masses who are just trying to make some tea and send their kids to school. And no. What is a civilian? How do you define a civilian? Somebody who doesn't wear a uniform? Is that how you define a civilian? Yeah. Okay, well, in that case, 2-1. Yeah. But even so, even if taking their numbers, their ratio, Israel is far ahead of any other country that would have to deal with urban conflict. There is a tremendous amount of collateral damage and killings in it's anything similar to this, right? But when Israel does it, that's when the whole world holds a giant microscope and studies and scrutinizes and condemns and so forth. Yeah. Nothing of the sort in the Ukrainian conflict right now, nothing of the sort in any history whatsoever, okay? So really fascinating.
Yeah.
Now, I want to continue on, just to hear how he kind of spins her around.
In the world, I understand that there are civilian casualties, and I understand that footage and coverage goes towards emotions and to cover those civilian casualties. But what I want to say is that we will get those figures out and they will be official and on record by the IDF with the name behind it. And then we will be able to say and to back up afterwards with names and numbers that we are indeed targeting the terrorists. We are not after the civilians, and we're going into great efforts in order to keep it that way. And
it is.
Okay, so we'll continue on with this because it's interesting. She moves on to another point. Keep in mind, once again, the very fact that Israel has been taking so much effort and so much time in an area called Gaza, where they could have easily just flattened everything within 2 hours, if not less, that speaks volumes itself. So obviously Israel is trying to do what it can to avoid the civilian casualties, as if somehow Israel's like eager to kill as many Palestinians as possible. It's so outrageous. Yeah. And they know it. They have to know, because it doesn't make any sense, but they don't want to believe that. Let's continue on, because she's talking about an evacuation of civilians, and watch how she ends up having to deal with that reality as well. So he's saying there's a corridor and a place where for a humanitarian congregation where they can know exactly who the good guys and who the bad guys are, right? So which makes sense. So they created a informational page with a bar scan code telling people, here's where you go, here's the directions, here's a map. This is what Israel does to allow the Palestinians. Yeah, don't you think it's amazing?
Yeah.
They protect these people as much as possible. If you're a regular civilian, please come here. Don't worry about it. You're going to be safe.
Right.
All right. So she doesn't like that.
Of course she doesn't.
Watch how she spins this.
It is, of course, hard to comprehend 2-for-1. But when you say you're going to great efforts, Colonel, one of those efforts is those IDF directions, which I don't know when you actually plugged in, but I had shared with anyone watching at the top of the show the directions for evacuation
that you've put out.
Yeah.
What you spoke about.
All right. So you know there's the QR code, right? And then if you click on, can't right now because there's a blackout. But if you were to click on it and you were to see where to go in this urban area, tiny little parcels, block by block, numbers, I suppose, it's hard to even read it. How do you really expect anybody to get that, to click on it, to see it, which they can't do right now, again, because the blackout, and then to follow the directions and to get somewhere safely? I mean, is that reasonable?
Okay, so look how, like, Israel does something that is designed to help innocent civilians,
right?
And she complains about that too. Like, it's not done the right way. Somehow there's a blackout, which there isn't, by the way. Somehow they're able to do a lot of camera stuff and all these iPhones everywhere. So please, I'm calling BS on that.
Right.
But it doesn't matter. It's not perfect. That's for sure. But you can also drop leaflets and otherwise, and there's communications about this. They created this zone. You think that the Israelis really want them to just stay behind?
Right.
Of course, it's ridiculous.
And Hamas, like, what is their record with civilians? Is there an example we could see of when they had their way with civilians? Like, were there QR codes? Were those to help them?
So let's continue on with this. From CNN.
I think, Aaron, that it may not be perfect, but it is the best thing that we can do. The situation is that for weeks we have designated a humanitarian zone, and we have been asking civilians to go there. Unfortunately, civilians, for various reasons, because they're under the control of Hamas, because international aid organizations have channeled them there, many other reasons, have not yet gone to the humanitarian zone, which I think is very unfortunate. The reason why we made that or designated that humanitarian zone is because it's one of the few areas where Hamas isn't embedded above and below ground, and therefore a relatively safe area, because we would have no interest in fighting there because Hamas isn't there. And that's what we've been asking all along. The attempt, or what you showed on the map, and I can agree that it's not perfect, but by the way, I contest the fact that there's a blackout, because I saw lots of cameras out when our hostages were being returned, and I saw lots of live footage from those occasions as well.
So he called her on that. There's nothing you can do to make them happy. No. So again, if you pulled out all the Israeli troops from Gaza, and in fact say we are hereby disbanding the IDF entirely and giving them a whole portion of the southern part of Israel, they would say, "But do you really think that's enough to give to the Palestinians? Do you really think that?" And even if you did a two-state solution, you know, where you give a whole country to them and give half of Israel, they would say, "Do you really think, you know, that's enough?" I mean, you know, you have the nicest portion of Israel. Right. You know, you've got the rich part of Israel, and you're giving the dregs of Israel, as not that there is such a thing, but that's what they would call it.
Yeah.
And you haven't given us the infrastructure. You've left us in poverty. They would complain about everything. There's nothing you could do.
Weapons.
You gave us no nuclear weapons. Exactly right. Why didn't you let us be able to protect ourselves from you?
Right.
You know, that's the mindset of these crazy people. Blinken, however, is now talking about, and he's with David Cameron, the former prime minister, now is, I guess, the Secretary of the State of England. And they're talking about how they're going to help out Israel anyway, England. I'm very happy about that.
Nice.
The U.S. Secretary of State and his British counterpart made clear they share a common position on Israel's war in Gaza. They've welcomed what they say are signs that Israel is allowing more humanitarian aid to get into Gaza.
Israel has made important commitments to significantly increase the supply of humanitarian assistance throughout Gaza, and has taken some initial actions as well.
And both insist that there will be no change in the policy of shipping arms to Israel.
Good. Yeah. I like that. All right. By the way, this is from Al Jazeera, and Al Jazeera is saying it in a very disappointed tone, as you can tell. But Cameron is going to talk, and he's talking about how he really we need to support Israel.
Right.
Our position is in line with our international partners. So far, no like-minded countries have taken the decision to suspend existing arms export licenses to Israel. And I'd add that Israel remains a vital defense and security partner to the UK. Our cooperation makes the UK and Israel more secure from external threats.
A common belief, too, that Hamas is a stumbling block in achieving a ceasefire, with no mention of any Israeli intransigence.
I love it. With no mention of Israeli intransigence. God, it's so ridiculous. Yeah. By the way, the tagline below, you can't see it on this podcast, but it says genocide in Gaza. It's a fact. You know, right. It's like, you know, the time of the genocide in Gaza. You know, I've heard this many times before, by the way. There's a genocide in Jenin, and there's a genocide in the West Bank. And it's over the years, they use that word very liberally.
Right.
As much as liberals do, yeah. Okay, but Hamas is a stumbling block. Every time there's a ceasefire effort, they just decide that they're not going to accept the ceasefire. Give up the hostages, and we'll stop.
Right.
But they want just a ceasefire without giving up hostages, and without surrendering,
and
insisting that they continue to take over Gaza. Okay, you know what? Sorry, we understand you have the hostages. It sucks. But that's not going to stop us from destroying you inside and out. So,
and one thing they do that's really obvious is they never actually contrast what the other side says. They never said what the beginning of this was, what like how unsafe the Israeli soldiers are. They just say only what the Israelis do militarily to combat and to protect themselves. And it's so obviously one-sided. Like, if Israel really was the bad side, you should do both sides and let everyone decide. But it's so obviously blatantly biased that it's I'm sorry, Israel is going to win, and everyone's going to show themselves to be fools again. And I think this is the first time I've actually been on the same side as Tony Blinken, which is amazing, too.
Well, he has to play. They're talking out of both sides of the mouth. Yeah. We talked about this before. They're trying to placate both the Jewish Americans and the pro-Palestinian Americans. Yeah. A lot of them are apparently in Michigan and Minnesota.
Yeah.
And I don't care. I mean, look, at the end of the day, you could say, I don't support Israel whatsoever and everything else. Well, okay, so pick your poison. Now you'll lose the entire Jewish population that was otherwise supportive of Israel. I know that a lot of Jews vote for Democrats, but you'll lose a lot of them. There's a huge portion that would say that was a hill beyond which you should not take, whatever.
Right.
It's a bridge too far. But let's say he collects, and now the Palestinian, pro-Palestinian community in America now says, okay, we're satisfied with Biden. He really is on our side. He understands us. Let's go vote for him for the next 4 years. Okay, so you'll get a minor amount of people. It's so ridiculous to completely effectuate a turnabout in American policy toward Israel just for the sake of maybe winning Michigan.
Yeah.
Really, maybe?
Yeah.
It's a very bizarre thing, and you stand the risk of losing everything else. Very concerning. All right, you may have heard about this situation in Arizona where because of the Supreme Court decision in the Dobbs case, basically reversing Roe v. Wade and its progeny, that the Arizona Supreme Court has determined that the pending law in Arizona, which is apparently a 15-week ban, is no longer valid because of Dobbs' decision. And so what has become effective is this 1864 law. During the Civil War, when Arizona was just a territory, not even a state, and they basically says there's no abortion whatsoever except for the life of the mother. And that would be, even with the exceptions, there's no exception for rape or incest. So this is, it's a very funky dynamic. What's happening now is, like, this is very simple, right? This is an easy fix. The Arizona legislature should get together. Apparently it's divided fairly evenly with the Republicans and Democrats. So they should get together and say, okay, look, you know, there's this law on the books and we're just going to repeal that. And we're going to create a new law the way that we think is reasonable among us. And maybe that'll be 15 weeks again. Maybe it'll be less. Maybe it'll be more. But whatever. That's the way, that's the whole import of the Dobbs decision, is to say, states, this is up to you. You're big boys and girls. Take care of it. So, but never doubt the ability of Democrats to seize upon an opportunity to make everything political. And abortion, there's nothing like it. Especially in a border state like Arizona, where immigration is a huge issue. So now they want to make abortion the issue by saying that somehow, isn't this crazy? We're going to have to live by this draconian rule from 1864. This is awful. And they're going to want to extend this, Devin, as long as possible. That's their main goal here. Extend, so that they can say, look, what happened in Arizona can happen in a state near you, in your own state. And we predict that that's exactly what's happening, and that's what will happen, and that's what the Republicans want. They will not stop until they restrict abortion altogether, even for the life of the mother, for that matter. Yeah, right? You'll see. So listen to the logic of what's going on between a Republican senator in Arizona and his counterpart, Democrat.
The session.
The lesson of today is that Republicans voted to uphold the territorial era abortion ban. Period.
That's from the Democrat.
That didn't stop Democrats from trying Wednesday twice to force a repeal vote.
30 ayes, 29 noes.
And twice, Republicans stopped them.
And Arizonans deserve to see their elected officials work on this matter, not adjourn. To delay the inevitable.
Representative Matt Gress, the only Republican to vote with Democrats.
They have as deeply held, sincere beliefs, as do I. They look at this issue differently than I do.
Gress and some other Republicans prefer the 15-week ban passed in 2022. Critics.
Yeah, so that's pretty basic. It's that they're going to they're going to go forward with probably a 15-week ban. But the Democrats disingenuously want to seize upon this as an opportunity to show how abortion is still alive and as an issue, as it were. They haven't aborted the abortion issue. Oh, I like that. I like that a lot. They really have not aborted the abortion issue. That's the only thing they won't love to abort. It's a strange dynamic that's going on in Arizona, but they really want to milk this. How about that? Is that a better way of putting it? They want to milk this issue as much as possible to show how draconian the Republicans are, because they love this law. They just love it because they hate abortion so much. But Arizona is not that deep red of a state. It voted, I believe, for Biden in 2020, right? Yeah. Okay. And they have two Democrat senators, and the governor is Democrat as well. So please, let's spare me the concept that somehow this is an effort by the Republicans to go back to the days of, I don't know, not Jim Crow. There was no Jim Crow there. But to the days of the Puritans, right? That's what they'd like. It's all a handmaid's tale as far as the Democrats are concerned. They're going to try to milk this. I think the problem for the Democrats in this particular situation in Arizona is that this happened, 7 months before the election? Because it's going to be fixed. If it happened 2 weeks before the election, maybe they've got something there. And then the Democrats would hold it over. But mark my words, the Democrats are going to try to delay this bill so that they can say how they're suffering under this draconian abortion law. It's so disingenuous, but that's exactly what's going to happen. Very frustrated because I know exactly what the Democrats are going to do, and you know it, I know it. And they want to make it a political talking point, and they want to march onto the air of CNN and MSNBC and New York Times, and so that this will forever be talked about. Okay, just like, as it were, every time a black is killed by a white cop, which is very rare, but boy, they'd love to talk about that. But if a black cop killed a white man, that would be a local news, right? So this is what matters to them. They've got their angle here, and they're gonna run with it. This is the inevitable consequence of what happened with Dobbs, the United States Supreme Court overruling Roe v. Wade. What are we to do? That's what's going to happen. All right. I don't know if you saw this, Devin, but there was a situation where I guess Biden was talking about how great his program is for the economy and how wonderful he's been at creating jobs and so on. A heckler then takes him on during the speech, and watch how he responds.
To get back to work. Well, I'll tell you what, you want to come make a speech or shush up, okay? I'm not messing around with him. He looks like he could take me.
All right, so first of all, I've got a gut feeling that this was actually staged. You can't see the video itself. I can. It looks like he planned this out, or that was prepared for this, at least. And then he says, you know, I can take you on, or you can take me on. And, you know, all these, you know, hoops and hollers by the audience because it looks like he's so tough and such. Like, it just seems very staged. And it would be easy to stage, right? You know, somebody starts, you know, have somebody yell from the audience, and then I'll respond with something else. So that's my personal belief, but we'll see. Can't be 100% sure. But one thing I can say, whether it's authentic or not, this was not the way he responded when these pro-Palestinian supporters heckled him on another economic forum and started saying that Israel should be forced out of Gaza and no more support for Israel, things like that. And what did he say? He said, you know, they have a point. They have a point. He caved in to them. So if you heckle and you have the right agenda in your heckling, then you will be respected. If you heckle about anything else, well, then you'll be mocked. And you'll be, you know, and he's smiling and he's laughing and the whole audience is with him on this. It's so disingenuous. I'm sticking to my opinion that this was all fabricated. All right, more news that I want to make sure we touch upon. Do we have time? Yeah. All right, so you hear this story about these Michigan parents who were held responsible for involuntary manslaughter. I think they got 5 to 10 to 15 years, well, whatever it is, it was a very substantial amount of time. And people have asked me, well, what do you think? I understand the argument that it's a slippery slope. It's unprecedented is what they say, and I think that's right. But this was an unusual situation. I really do have to say, you know, Matt Walsh had a long colloquy about this, saying that, you know, you could blame every parent for everything that any of their children do, because at the end of the day, if they're criminals, that is, if they commit a crime, you know, maybe you didn't teach them well enough. Maybe you didn't take care of them well enough. Maybe you didn't feed them the right food. There's a whole bunch of arguments you can make. Maybe you neglected them. You didn't spend time with them at the baseball game. I don't know. That's what Matt Walsh seems to be saying. I reject that argument because it's too attenuated, right? You can't establish a causal link. It's a little bit like the argument that the bartender might be responsible for letting somebody that he's gotten drunk through his pouring a lot of alcohol and not cutting him off at some point, and then knowing that he's going to go out in the street and drive a car, right? You know, first of all, I'm not necessarily for that, holding the bartender liable, but you get the idea. There have been many instances where a bartender and its bar have been found liable. Okay, but that's not what this situation is either. What this situation, to make a perfect analogy, is more like the bartender giving the keys to the drunk guy and telling him, have a good day, enjoy your ride. That's pretty much what happened with these parents. If you look at the texts and the other, exchanges of information that came out during the trial, you'll see that the parents not only told them to basically suck it up when he told them, look, I'm a little bit crazy. I need some help. The father told them to suck it up. And then they also gave him the gun that caused all these deaths, right? It really is like giving a gun. If you gave a gun to a baby or to a four-year-old, what do you expect is going to happen? In that case, you would agree with me that the parents should be liable, right? But that's what happened here. He was a teenager, I guess, and he went about killing a lot of innocent people. And I think the parents, have a great degree of culpability about this. It's, in law, we have a but-for test, right? So the but-for test means, but for the actions of person X, would situation Y have happened, right? So it's a little bit like attempted murder. It's like attempted any sort of crime. At what point does it rise to a criminal level? And that's a question for a jury to decide. Is there a causal connection? Was this close enough in creating the crime or allowing the crime to happen to justify criminalizing certain behavior? That's what it is, right? So I always give the example of somebody who really wants to kill somebody and he decides he's going to buy a gun. Okay, in his mind, step number one, he's going to buy a gun. Is that enough to hold him accountable for attempted murder? No, probably not, right? Now it takes the gun with him and he's driving in the car in the direction of the guy, his intended victim. Is that enough? The answer is probably no, still. Now he's in the car, just kind of thinking. He's in front of the intended victim's house, and he's not there. Okay, is that attempted murder? No. And so on it goes. Now he knocks on the door. He's got a gun. Is that attempted murder? Maybe. Not quite yet. And then maybe he is there. And now he spots him and he shoots at him and he misses. Okay, that would be attempted murder, right? I mean, everyone feels like, I think this is more the situation of attempted murder, where you actually have a causal nexus between the parents not taking care of their kid, which is their duty, and getting a gun for the child, knowing that he's a messed up kid, despite all the warnings, and the kid himself was texting his own friends saying, my parents did this for me and didn't do that for me. I think it was a very damning bit of evidence. So that's my take on it. It's yes, I understand it's unprecedented, but this was a very unusual situation. I think that these parents are getting what they've got coming for them. And you know, of course, the perpetrator himself, the murderer himself, is in jail. So I think all three should be in jail, and they are. So that's a good result as far as I see it, even though there's a lot of talk about this. I understand. It may open up. I guess the fear is that it will open up, Devin, that the opportunity for other prosecutors to now look into the history of a child and blame the parents one way or the other. I get that. I understand that. But there is a point of culpability, right? Just like you have for the bartender, giving the keys to a drunk person that he's been liquoring up all night long. I think that this is a very similar situation. All right, enough about that. One last thing I want to talk about is this in Scotland, do you know about this? The hate law that they just imposed? Yeah? Okay. All right, well, the gist of it is this. In Scotland, they passed a law saying that you may not say anything that might offend a reasonable person. Okay? That. That's so classic of how the liberal mind thinks. They always believe that there won't be any consequences to this. So what happened? Well, within a day, there was something like 8,000 complaints already filed with the Scotland police, saying that this person said this thing and it offended him or her, and now go arrest that person who said it. Right? It's insane. Did they ever think about the consequences of this? Did they think that this wouldn't happen? And nobody could say that somehow they filed a frivolous police report, because you're saying, look, it offended me. That, you know, John said that he likes butterflies and I don't like butterflies. And I'm offended. Okay? So arrest him, this John guy, right? Now, I know that butterflies is a silly, you know, example, but what if let's say John said, I think Israel's an awesome country. Israel's wonderful, right? And so a pro-Palestinian supporter would say, this offends me. All right, does he get to arrest the pro-Israeli guy? Is that how it works? I mean, why wouldn't it? Why wouldn't that be used to shut down any sort of pro-Israel protest? And you know that the reverse wouldn't be, right? If an Israeli who was in Scotland, let's say, heard some sort of chants about death to the Jews, death to Israel, you think that Scotland would go and arrest these people? Oh my God, I didn't even think about that. It's so absurd. And now it's all falling apart, right? It's so silly. It's all about their feelings. At the end of the day, that you cannot run a country based upon feelings. You just have to suck it up at some point and understand that other people have opinions that you find offensive and vice versa. That's the way society works. You cannot please everyone at the same time. And yet Scotland, in its infinite wisdom, somehow felt like this would be a really wise thing to do, a good for society, right? Putting aside the fact that this would send a very chilling effect upon people's desire to speak freely, right? Don't you think? I mean, isn't that obvious? But again, the left never thinks about the consequences of its bold and glorious ideas. It just doesn't. And you know it's a lefty idea, of course. No conservative would bring this up, right? So we know it. But they always have to learn the hard way. They propose these grandiose, beatific ideas, only to have themselves slapped in the face. It's going to be so embarrassing. They're going to have to repeal this law because, for all the reasons I just said, you know, you can't possibly please everyone for one thing. It'll create a chilling effect for another, and then ultimately it will shut up all discussion about anything that's important. I mean, particularly Israel and anything about America, anything about global warming. I mean, what if somebody says, I don't think global warming is a real thing. I think it's a fraud, right? Well, somebody's going to be offended by that. I know I've lost a lot of friends, haven't you, Devin, about your opinion about global warming, and you think that it's basically a fraud. It's certainly not very well researched, and it's got a whole bunch of flaws. I've had people say that they've been offended by that, and they don't want to be my friend anymore. Yeah, I don't look at me like that. It's true. I was on Facebook, and I have some sort of discussion groups in Facebook, and I said I'd like to have somebody on my radio show to debate me when it comes to global warming, because even though I'm not an expert in global warming, I have some questions about global warming, and I don't think I've ever gotten a solid answer to any of these questions. So can you have an expert, anyone out there, can you please present a very competent global warming expert to challenge me about this? Because I'll take him on. And that, just to say that I want to debate somebody, was cause enough for people to disown me as a friend. And not just Facebook friends, by the way, which are, of course, very ephemeral, but real friends. People have been friends for decades. So what if I challenged global warming? What if I challenged evolution, for that matter? What if I said your atheism bothers me, right? And what if they said that your belief in God bothers them? I mean, it's so preposterous, this law, and yet they decided to push forward with it. Anyway, I see we're running out of time, but I want to leave this one very interesting news segment that I believe happened in England. This was called the Cass Review. And this anchor woman said that, and this is from Libs of TikTok, by the way, this anchor woman was talking to this woman who's a trans person, apparently, and she started off right away by referring to herself as, my pronouns are they, them. And anyway, I'll let the interview speak for itself.
Good afternoon, Julia. Thanks. You know my pronouns are they, them. How are you doing?
Yeah. Thank you for telling me your pronouns. I use correct grammar. So the only thing I would need to refer you to is, to your face would be you. But I'm not being rude. You can choose your pronouns. You can choose what you want to call yourself, but you don't get to require me to use incorrect grammar and factually incorrect things. You're not a plural.
I love this woman. I love her. It's awesome. She says it so off the cuff, and she says, you don't get to tell me how I change my grammar. I mean, she's 100% right. Anyway, let's continue.
You're a one person, and you're a female person. So I will use she and her. Thank you very much.
Do what you like, I guess.
Well, there you are. You didn't need to tell me then, did you?
Maybe I'm just making sure people know in case they're watching and they want to refer to me respectfully.
Is it disrespectful for me to use correct factual grammar?
It's not incorrect or unfactual grammar to use singular they, them pronouns for an individual. But we're here to talk about the Cass Review.
Yeah, but you chose to bring it up.
You chose to use the incorrect pronouns for me.
I chose to use the correct pronouns for a single woman who is appearing on my show.
I'm not a single woman, though. I'm a very special non-binary trans person, as you just pointed out.
I didn't just point that out. I introduced you as a journalist and a Virgin Radio presenter.
No, just before I came on, you were talking about how people with all these labels like to be special. And I'm just making sure that everyone knows I'm special.
Wow, the narcissism on this woman. Do we have any more on this clip? Let's continue on.
Okay, I'm not special. I'm just a boring old heterosexual married woman. But, you know, sorry about that. We're not allowed to do that anymore. In fact, that probably does make me special now. I don't know.
Good afternoon.
Okay, so this woman, this anchor, is just awesome. I love her. How funny it is, right? She calls it like it is. And I think more of our news media needs to do exactly the same thing. That's the way I will do it as well. If somebody is trans, I wish them the best. They can think of themselves whatever way they want to. But again, just like this anchor woman said, you can't force it upon me. I'm not going to, if you call yourself Jesus or Napoleon or Alexander the Great, I'm not going to refer you to you as Jesus or your majesty or your holiness or whatever it is. No, I'm not going to do it. I mean, I'm not going to indulge your lunacy. I'm sorry, it's just lunacy, dysphoria at best. But what's really going on here is pure narcissism, and you can see it in this woman who claims to be trans. I don't know if she actually is trans. I think she's one of these people that, I guess her last name is Cass. She, you could see in the way she considers herself very special. She's a special person, but she's not, right? I mean, obviously, these people are just conforming to the new trend of the time, and now she's super special. That's what's real. That's what's going on here. Is this need to feel special? These people need purpose in their lives. They need meaning in their lives. And now, by claiming that she's they them, somehow she gets to be special, and everyone needs to dance around her. And then they get their moment in the sun, and now they have their meaning. As silly and preposterous as it is, and as empty as it is, that's their meaning. Welcome to the real world. I really do feel sad for these people. They can't roll up their sleeves, realize that they're a woman in this case, and I'm talking this particular woman, that she can't seem to recognize that she's a woman and doesn't accept it for herself, and yet she accepts us to accept her. She can't accept herself, but we have to accept her as she defines herself. No, ma'am, not going to do it. Just not. It's a lie before God. It's a lie in my own mind, and I ain't going to do it. And you've got some work to do to understand your own meaning and significance in life. If you don't have it, that's not my problem. And I'm not going to play into your game so that you can somehow feel more significant, more relevant, more with purpose in your life. That's your problem. As we say in Yiddish, that's your mishigas. Okay, you have to deal with something. You've got issues, lady. Okay, but don't impose it on me. All right? It's weird. The whole thing is weird. I do think there's a backlash now happening, and I'm glad to report that. It seems to be very cool. One last thing I'll say is that I appeared in front of the American Freedom Alliance this past Sunday in Torrance. A great speaker set there. I was a speaker myself. I don't know why they had me. I was delighted to be part of the team. I feel like that that movie, you know, what is the movie? Whatever you wanted to know about sex, but or Too Afraid to Ask, by Woody Allen. And there's a scene where there's a bunch of sperm, you know, played out by humans, of course, by men, and they're all ready to perform, as it were, and they're all white guys, but there's one black guy there. And the black says, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? Anyway, I feel like that guy. What was I doing among these intellectual giants? We had Alex Newman there. And we also had the woman from Lips of TikTok. She was amazing. Chaim? Yeah. Chaim Rachik? Yeah, that's the one. She was brilliant. And the whole crowd was fantastic. We were talking about the destruction of childhood and how there's a war going on against children. And I think that's really true. Anyway, check it out. It's going to be in the American Freedom Alliance video archives. It was a lot of fun. You get to hear me speak. And I think it was very well received. All right, folks, speaking about children, definitely get Keeping the Kids All Right, How to Keep Your Kids Safe from the New Woke Culture. I think you'll like it a lot. It's doing very well. And it's such a joy, I have to say, when people come up to me and say, look, your book really changed me. It changed the way I approached all of this. It's so straightforward. It's so simple. And I don't know why I didn't kind of figure this out myself. Those are such powerful words to me. I was so heartened to hear this. Not because somehow that means I'm going to get more money from the sales of my book. That's not why I do this. It's about making sure that every kid stays conservative, stays loving of God. This is the way to do it. This is the way. And I know every parent that tells me, you've really helped me so much here, I know that that kid is safe. It's the greatest feeling ever. I love it. All right, folks, Brock Lurie signing off, saying God bless, and we'll talk with you next week. Carries us out.